the Shore Shame Podcast, shining a light to the nations.
Shalom once again, everybody. I'm Bill Cloud, and welcome to this week's Torah Tidbit. This week, our tidbit is taken from the portion called Matot, which is a word interpreted as tribes. And so the portion begins by saying in Numbers chapter 30, verses 1 and 2, "Then Moses spoke to the heads of the tribes concerning the children of Israel, and he said, 'This is the thing which the Lord has commanded. If a man makes a vow to the Lord, or if he swears an oath to bind himself by some agreement, he shall not break his word, but he shall do according to all that proceeds out of his mouth.'" And so, as we see, as this Torah portion begins, it is discussing a vow, it's discussing an oath, and it underscores the sanctity of that vow or of that oath. The Hebrew word vow is neder, and this is a word that is understood to be something that a person decides to prohibit for himself, even if the Torah allows it. In other words, a person can obligate himself to do something, or if it works out that way, not do something beyond what the Torah requires of him. For instance, very few people were required to be a Nazirite. There's only a couple of cases that we can think of where God determined that they were to be a Nazirite. But if a person willingly made that vow, they were expected to be faithful to it. Because a vow is a solemn promise. And this promise is to consecrate something to God or to do something in God's service. Now, sometimes the vow is an expression of gratitude for divine favor, for His blessing. Many times we see in the Bible that vows were made in times of distress, the motive being to secure help from God. For instance, Jacob made such a vow in Genesis chapter 28, and he said this, "And Jacob vowed a vow, saying, 'If God will be with me and will keep me in the way that I go, and will give me bread to eat and clothing to put on, and I come again to my father's house in peace, then shall the Lord be my God. And this stone which I have set for a pillar," that's the stone that he had set at his head the night before, "this stone which I have set for a pillar shall be God's house. And all of that you shall give me, I will surely give the tenth to you." So there is a vow that was made in distress. Another example of this type can be found when Hannah, the wife of Elkanah, asks the Lord for a male child, and then she vows to make the male child, which turns out to be Samuel, to make him God's servant and a Nazirite. But notice in both cases, those making the vow are in the midst of a crisis. Jacob was fleeing from Esau to a foreign land. Hannah desperately wanted a son. But notice also that God is the only one to hear their vow, because in Jacob's case, he was alone. In Hannah's case, she spoke in her heart, only moving her lips. And so this underscores that once the vow is made, regardless of who hears it, it is to be performed because God heard it, and He expects it to be honored because it is a vow. And so then this should stand as a warning to you and to me because, like most everybody else, when we are in distress, well, we have a tendency to start making promises to God. There's nothing necessarily wrong with that, except when we don't really mean it. And unfortunately, we make these kinds of promises, and as soon as the crisis has passed, it is our tendency as human beings to forget our vow to God. Only problem is, God doesn't forget. Rabbinical sources contend that making a vow to God is equivalent to something only God can do. And what they mean by that is, once a person makes a vow to God, they are obligated to keep it as if it was a commandment that God had instituted. And so whatever the person has vowed, he is bound to be faithful to that, just as strictly as to one of God's own laws. And so consequently, a vow is to be considered as sacred. Now, I want to share an example with you. in this Torah portion, Matot, as chapter 32 begins, and we see Israel is preparing to enter the land of Canaan, the tribes of Reuben and the tribe of Gad request of Moses to remain on the eastern bank of the River Jordan. And so then, to this request, Moses asks this question in verses 6 and 7. Shall your brothers go to war, and shall you sit here? And why do you break the heart of the sons of Israel from going over into the land which the Lord has given them? So they want to stay on the one side of Jordan, and Moses says, well, look, it's not fair for you to stay here, and you're going to break the hearts of your countrymen. And so these two tribes respond to Moses with a promise, a vow, and that is that we will go at the head of the column to fight the war until all of Israel is settled. Now, as it turned out, that meant they had obligated themselves to fight a war that lasted for at least 7 years. Now, when they say this, Moses responded favorably to their request, but he reminded them of the vow and the sanctity of that vow that they had made. And so, like every other vow, theirs had to be honored just as surely as if God commanded them to do the things they vowed to do. Moses stressed that they must keep their vow if they were to be considered blameless before the Lord and before Israel. Now, the only way to be considered blameless in this case was for them to keep their word. Not only must their conscience be clear before God, but their actions must be above reproach where their fellow man is concerned. Now, from this latter point, I think that we could glean or should glean that when it comes to our word and our reputation, we must be willing to avoid things that might even appear to be wrong. In other words, Paul encouraged us in 1 Thessalonians to abstain from every appearance of evil. And I'm bringing this out because, in a way, that was exactly what Moses was warning the tribes of Reuben and Gad of. If they had not been committed to that goal, they were going to ruin their reputation. And so he alerted them to the fact that if you do that, your sin, which in this case would be not being true to your word, is going to find you. Now, to their credit, we find that they kept their word. All of us need to internalize this truth because, according to the Torah portion, when a man vows to the Lord or he swears an oath, he binds his soul with his bond. The Hebrew word that is translated as oath is shavua, and it stems from the root word that means to be complete or full. And so then that is to imply that if a person makes a vow or an oath, they're never going to be complete or whole until they have fulfilled it. The Hebrew word for bond is isar, and it means to restrain. And so consequently, a bond is, in rabbinical view anyway, considered to be a negative oath, meaning that this is a self-imposed pledge to abstain from something that may be perfectly lawful. It infers that it might involve something that could be a weakness for that person, but not necessarily a weakness for others. For example, a lot of people have opted to give up television altogether. There are others who don't see the need to do this. According to Scripture, wine is not unlawful, but for some, it could be a stumbling block. And so, when a person makes a vow, whether it's a positive one or a negative one, the goal is for that person to be complete. Now, to the person who makes the vow, Moses says, he shall not break his word, but shall do all that proceeds from his mouth. The phrase, to break his word, is literally to profane his word, which is to ignore it, to treat it flippantly. It's the same concept when the Bible talks about profaning the name of Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh, which means to ignore his authority and consequently to ignore his word. And this is important because when all is well, our human tendency is to forget what has been vowed that was probably made in the midst of a crisis. Still, as far as God is concerned, the person is obligated to keep their word, all that proceeds from their mouth. Because you see, time and again, we see that God honors all that proceeds from His mouth, and He expects the same from us. And so if we see this connection, we see how vows that we make are considered to be equivalent to God's commands in terms of obedience and what is expected of us. Now, at this point, I think it's needful to examine something that the Messiah taught within the context of what we say and what we vow. In Matthew's Gospel, Matthew chapter 5, he said this, beginning at verse 33. Again, you have heard that it was said to those of old, you shall not swear falsely, but shall perform your oaths to the Lord. But I say to you, do not swear at all, neither by heaven, for it is God's throne, nor by the earth, for it is His footstool, nor by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great King. Now, in these verses, is the Messiah saying that you and I should not make a vow? I don't think that's what he's saying, because elsewhere in Scripture, we see that people have made vows, and God was willing to honor those vows if they were faithful to keep them. So when it comes to what Messiah says here, I've always considered that what he was really saying was, don't try and convince someone of something by involving heaven. In other words, if you don't mean it, then don't say it at all. Thus, he continued with his admonishment with these words in verse 37, but let your yes be yes, and your no, no. For whatever is more than these is from the evil one. In other words, as far as I'm concerned, he was telling you and me, say what you mean what you say. Whether you're speaking to your fellow man, whether you're speaking to God. And so then, ladies and gentlemen, when it comes to believers, people ought to be able to take your word. They ought to be able to take you at your word. And it should be that God should be able to take you at your word. However, when we make a vow to God, we had better mean it, because He takes it that seriously. I'm sure that all of us, I know I have been guilty of this, at one time or the other, we have committed to God in some way. We've made a promise. We've made a vow. And we really meant what we said when we said it. But then later, we failed to follow through. Peter's confession that he would never deny the Messiah, if everyone else did, comes to mind right here. Yet, we know that he didn't fulfill that vow, if I can call it that, because he denied the Messiah three times. Yet later on, we see that Yeshua told him that he would be given another chance later in life to prove if he meant that or not. I guess what I'm saying here is that we all, most likely, need to be forgiven of breaking vows, those that we've made to our fellow man and those that we've made to God. Still, we also need to commit ourselves to being true to our word. I know that it's going to be a daily struggle, but it is one that we are expected to persevere in. That is, say what you mean what you say. And to do that, it's going to take a strength that, in my view, can really only come from the Messiah. And so we look to Him to give us that strength and that commitment and the stamina, spiritually speaking, to say what we mean and mean what we say. And with that, we've come to the end of our Torah portion, our Torah tidbit this week. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.
Like what you're hearing? Become a BillCloud Premium Partner to watch or listen to hundreds of hours of teachings and resources on demand. Go to BillCloud.com/subscribe to start watching today.